Hello, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you're joining us from. Welcome to the School of Mary live Seneca series, and this is the Crossing the Exile series, where we take a look at what Jesus explains to us is this vital journey, and he explains to us also in very simple terms that it's not just getting to where we need to be, which is the end game, of course, to go back to that prelapsarian era of Adam, you know, to go back to where Adam was just before he sinned, but to, for lack of a better word, to enjoy the ride and to recognize the value of the ride. And I think once we listen to what Jesus has to say about this journey in the exile, this crossing the exile, we recognize that there's no such thing as a bad day because of the impact being made, not just to the glory of God and to the pleasure of God, but to the benefit of all souls. In another dimension, all souls, past, present, and future, unexplainable in human terms, non-accessible outside the divine will, but inside the divine will, all is possible. And it is also possible to introduce Maureen. Hi, Maureen. I'm going to allow Maureen now to unmute herself because I'm going to forget. I cannot do that. Hi, Maureen.
Oh, did I do it? Okay, good. Hi.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. All right, good.
You know, okay. I was thinking about this also today. And well, you know what? Let me bring up the document because there's so much to talk about. But you know what? Before we do that, Maureen, I know I put you through this exercise all the time, but I just think it's so worth it because I cannot get enough of this passage, this volume 17. October 23rd, 1924. I think it exemplifies really, in essence, what this journey, this crossing the exile is and why it's so vital to our blessed Lord. Could we do this, please?
Yeah, for sure. My will, living in the creature who is crossing the exile, is as though operative and ruling in the house of the creature, which is more amazing. And this is why she forms for me a more pleasing enchantment, which charms me and holds such attraction for my gaze as to captivate me to fix my pupils upon her without being able to move them. Ah, you do not know how necessary this enchantment is in these times in which so many evils will come.
Yeah, I'm really amazed. Well, I shouldn't be amazed because, you know, God is just amazing, period. But I'm amazed on how much is captured. And this is only a snippet, a little excerpt of the passage. But he talks about, of course, you know, how much pleasure he gains. And I think we went through this. I don't want to repeat it again, but I think it's a really great analogy. And because it's great, I'm sure someone else thought about it. I couldn't have done it myself. That you know, when the child is in our house, they're under our reign, they're under our rules, they're going to do what we want them to do, usually, you know, pray the rosary, say grace before meals, go to church on Sunday. Then they get to that point where they go out on their own. And just like Jesus here in the exile, he's looking at us. We're not forced. We have free will. We can do it. We cannot do it. It's totally up to us. But just like our children, when they grow up and they're out of the house, okay, now they're out of the reign of the parents, and let's see how they're doing. And then when we go to their house, using the example that's here, we see that they're saying grace before meals. We see that they're praying the rosary in the evening. We see that they're going to Mass on Sunday. And it's so much more delight. There's so much more pleasure in seeing that. I think, Maureen, because they're doing it voluntarily, just like we're doing it voluntarily in the exile, where the blessed in heaven, I hate to say it, but they're sort of forced. I mean, it's either God's way or no way. I mean, they have to do it. They have to be in the divine realm. We don't have to. But I guess it's rewarding that God sees that we choose, we elect to live in his most holy divine will as opposed to just our own human will. I think that's extraordinary. And I think that's the way I better understand. Now, again, each of us may put it into a different perspective because we all are wired slightly differently. You know, I've got more loose wires than probably most, but you know, depending on how you're wired, you can put it into a context where God will just bring out shouts of light, shouts of music that'll explain it that much deeper, and it'll actually resonate not with the intellect, but it'll move the soul. You know, like how, and again, I don't like to use this comparison, but you know how At certain times, we get moved by a particular song, whether it be because we're reminiscing of a certain era of our lives, or it's just a song that touches home, maybe because of its impelling lyrics. But there's something that just moves us. It can move us to tears. It can move us to pity. It can move us to anything. But it moves us more than our normal day-to-day interaction with everything else. And I think that's what's happening with the divine will. I think everything is moving us into this, I have to say, euphoric mode, but I don't think we're recognizing it as euphoric. I think it's one of those situations where you get into it and you feel so happy, but you can't explain why you feel happy. Sometimes these are fleeting moments. God gives us just a taste of it, and then he takes it away from us. But when you remember it, it's almost like he's creating addicts out of us. He's saying, "This is what it is." Don't you like that? Just like with our Blessed Eucharist, this is the divine will. Aren't you fond of it? Isn't it moving you? Isn't it working in you? Aren't the grace and graces overwhelming you? And again, they may not be, because again, the efficacy, the effectiveness of the Eucharist, just like all of God's grace, is all really predicated on our disposition, our willingness, our openness to receive it, to embrace it, to believe it, to trust it, and really to put into action. So again, we have this sort of volume control while on earth, but when God moves in the soul, he bypasses all the circuitry, he bypasses all the knobs and bells and whistles that we can possibly tweak. He just does it on his own in a very mystical, mysterious way. And I think that's what he's doing. But the crossing the exile, I think if we allow it to work in us, I think we're going to get more out of it than we can actually explain to anyone. I mean, even Louisa had difficulty. She says, I know what, I'm paraphrasing. She says, I know what Jesus says. I don't know how to explain it. And a lot of times that's what's happening, even with for example, right now with the Vatican. I mean, well, they don't exactly know exactly what Louisa is saying or what Jesus was saying, but they kind of know, but they just don't know how to explain it. And how do they put this into perspective? How do they ground it? How do they tie it to something in our faith, the patristics, the magisterium, the doctors of the church, the fathers? Again, it's an onerous task. That's why Father Anuza, he's already done all this. So that's why it's so great he's getting involved. So we'll see, though. Like we said, if it's God's will that Father be able to show them the light in which they should read these writings, and it'll be off to the races. Or perhaps if it's God's will that it's not the time yet, then Father, as apt as he is to get this done, will be unsuccessful. Because again, it's all in God's time. And if he's going to give us more time, he's actually giving us an opportunity to grow in faith. And he says, faith equals God in volume 2. When I return, will I find faith? He is so pleased that we believe, we love, and we trust God in faith. So again, if it's not the time for the Vatican to wake up and say, okay, this is the way we do it, then again, I think it's just another opportunity for each and every one of us. Any thoughts on that, Maureen? Not to put you on the spot.
I just think, I don't think we should be that upset by it, because everything is God's will, and it's not holding us back from doing anything. We're all still learning.
That's the key. It does nothing to us.
No.
I mean, we might get demoralized slightly for a moment. Okay, well, it's not time. But then anyway, we have to remember, this is not, we're not pushing any of the buttons. We're not running anything. This is all, God is the author, and everything is going to be played out as long as we just adhere by the script. And the script says right now, it's not the time. The time may be tomorrow, but we don't know. Again, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Well, I just think that just different stories in the scriptures where sometimes Jesus sped up the time, and sometimes he'll push back a little, right? So he's the God of time. And I remember reading where he came out of the it was supposed to be 3 days in the tomb. Well, he came out a little early because the Blessed Mother was praying so hard, or just different other different things. And so in the fullness of time, which he is God of, it'll all happen in the fullness of time. So we just keep doing what we're doing. God controls all that.
Couldn't have said any better. And it really has no impact on what we're doing. Uh-uh. And again, it may make it a little bit more difficult, because you may have some people you know, saying, you know, or you know, really not supporting it at all, and maybe even just trying to deject us by saying, well, you know, it's not approved, and or EWTN said this, or they said that, and you know, the Vatican says they've stopped the process, and all these things, and you know, we can play all these words, but it's been paused. The Archbishop of Corrado told us it's been paused, and it's a good pause because what they're doing is they're going back, and they're rereading, restudying, recontemplating, remeditating on what they should have done even more robustly. So they're just saying, okay, we really shouldn't be at this point because we're not 100% on the point before this. So let's stop it here. Let's pause and let's go back and reexamine that. And I think that's what's going to happen. And I think that, you know, to your point, I think that's where everything's going to start to take effect. Again, if, but Jesus says, this is what's so interesting. He says, I don't know what the volume is. He says that the church is going to have difficulty with this. He says, because they're going to try to understand it in their human terms. And I have it somewhere here, but I can't find it, of course. And then Jesus says also, he says, well, you really have to be in the divine will for me to give you the full breadth of the understanding of it. So, okay, so if these souls that are reading it, if they're not in the divine will, then they're looking at it from the outside in, how's that going to work? And again, we can get bogged down with that. We can have discussions all day about that. But as far as I'm concerned, I think that's just a distraction.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'd say we can give ourselves a couple conversations and then just move on. Because there's so many distractions in the church right now. Everybody's this little group and this little group and this little group. So, and Satan's going, oh, look at them all fighting. This is exactly what I want. So we just keep our head down, do what we're supposed to do, and keep moving forward. Because I think the greatest offensive weapon of the church right now is this. And so we have to remember that what we're doing is where all the strength is coming from, because it's Jesus. So we can't get sidetracked, I don't think, by anything, and take this as our vocation right now. It's more important than anything else we're doing. And it's fun because, you know, we're doing it in our homes and our little rooms and little churches here and there and so in our life. So we're not out there. No one's even seeing us, you know, so I think it's really fascinating, and just to be a part of it, even if you're not living in it. Like, I don't consider myself, I'm not there yet, but I'm on the road to it, and I'm on the right road. I know that. So that's, I could never say that about anything in my life, but that's, I know, true. This is the right road, and it's really wonderful.
No, that's true. And you know, and us divine willies, we're not exempt from all those problems, also those oppositions and those sects and those, you know, I follow Paul, I follow Peter, I follow James.
Right.
I mean, we all follow Christ and his blessed mother. But I think that's just a humanness coming out of us. And we all have a tendency to gravitate toward that. I think some of us do a better job saying, no, I'm not going there. Sort of, you know, lean the other way. Because again, it's just, I remember the first time I picked up Father Nuzzi really quickly at the airport. First time I met him. it's so interesting. He was apprehensive, first of all, because somebody just stole his laptop bag in the Chicago airport. So he arrives in Newark. So he's already apprehensive, not feeling great, because someone just robbed him of his laptop, which was his whole presentation for 3 or 4 days. But after talking to him for a little while, I said, you know, Father, I said, scratching my head, I said, hey, we've got a lot of division in the world and the church and society. I said, I'm hearing things and I'm seeing things. Is it true that these same devices or divisiveness is in the divine will itself? He says, you bet there is. And then, of course, you know, we learn that. And, you know, being in my seat, you know, when you do nothing, a lot of people talk to you because they figure you're doing nothing. So I get a lot of feedback coming in from all different directions. And you can't, I couldn't even tell you. I don't want to tell you because you'd be demoralized.
Yeah.
But I mean, we can all have our favorites. If parents can have favorite children and not neglect the other, we can all have favorites. We're all, you know, disposed differently. But we ought to keep our criticism down for others that we don't like as much. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't try to put them down or to belittle them. I mean, it's not Catholic. It's not Christian. It's not, mm-hmm. it's not divine willish for sure. And yeah. There's a lot of that out there. And I'm sorry to say, but again, all that will, I think, be cleared up sooner more than later. Okay. This is really great. Can we just read, I'm not going to, have you read a lot of this, Maureen, just so we can get onto the new material. But can you just read this last passage, please? This last paragraph, I should say.
Sure.
I think this says enough.
On the other hand, my will, living in the creature who was crossing the exile, is as though operative and ruling in the house of the creature, which is more amazing. And this is why she forms for me a more pleasing enchantment, which charms me and holds such attraction for my gaze as to captivate me to fix my pupils upon her without being able to move them. Ah, you do not know how necessary this enchantment is in these times in which so many evils will come. The peoples will be forced to eat one another. They will be taken by such rage as to become fierce, one against the other. But the greatest guilt is of the leaders. Poor peoples, they have true slaughterers, incarnate devils as leaders, who want to slaughter their brothers. If the evils were not grave, your Jesus would not leave you as though deprived of him. You fear that it may be for other things that I deprive you of me. No, be reassured. It is my justice that, depriving you of me, wants to pour out upon creatures. You, however, never go out of my will, so that its sweet enchantment may spare the people's worst evils.
So the why, when, and how God gives us in a quick paragraph as to what he's doing. You know, this enchantment, he said earlier in the volumes that the greatest thing we can do to receive this gift in the deepest method possible would be to move God, to move God to want to give this gift to us, to prove to him that we have this incessant desire for it. Now he's taking it to another level because he realizes that more grace is going to be necessary for the times that are going to come. And he says, I'm going to give you more grace, but again, I have to be fair, I have to be just. So I'm going to give you an opportunity, again, to earn it. Remember, we did nothing to earn being given the opportunity to journey in this gift. We did nothing to earn it. However, once we're introduced to the gift, that's when our work begins. And that's when we will be given commensurate to how much effort we put in. That's how much will be given by God. So again, he said to move God was the greatest thing we can do to receive it. Now he's saying, okay, I'm taking it to another level. I'm raising the bar. Now you can enchant me, but you can enchant me very easily. And again, moving God is embedded somewhere within enchantment. Again, we want to enchant God so that he can give us in fairness and justice these additional grace and graces that we need. And again, he doesn't give us anything that's difficult. He says, actually, he does not know how to give us difficult things. And we also learned from volume, I think it's 16, that he had to make this gift easy and accessible to all, in all situations, in all conditions, in all circumstances. That includes everyone. He says, except for those who do not want it. So the only ones that are excluded here, the only ones that cannot receive this gift is if they don't want it. Because again, God's not going to invalidate their free will. So again, it's here. And Father Iannuzzi, again, probably the greatest theologian representing the divine will, he tells us in his book, The Splendor of Creation, quote, that anyone in the state of grace can immediately experience God's eternal mode of activity, end quote, meaning that anyone in the state of grace can receive this gift. Now, that doesn't mean that they receive the gift on the level of Louisa. But it's like being brought into the foyer, out of the rain. We're brought into the mansion of God. Anyone in the state of grace can be brought into that. Now our work begins. Are we going to explore? Are we going to uncover what furniture Adam and Eve left when they got kicked out? Are we going to go to the kitchen? Are we going to the bedrooms? Are we going to the basement? Are we going to journey around and see as much as we can learn? And that's, I think, what we're doing right now. So that being said, let's journey, because this is really neat. Okay, I'm going to bring us back to where we were last week, and then we can just maybe do a quick paragraph on that, Maureen, and then we can just dive into the new stuff. This is getting too long. Okay, this is what we did last year. Last week, we talked about humility, confidence, not being a false virtue, and that confidence is the main, Jesus says, confidence is the main ingredient to bake humility or to form humility. And it sounds like a paradox, but you know, if you meditate on that, it's the confidence that allows us to be humble. We're not trying to prove everything at every moment. I know it's like the silly analogy, but usually the biggest guy on the boardwalk is the calmest guy, usually. I mean, that may have changed because everything's changed in life today. But okay, so if we can read the red here, Maureen, that we did last, okay, and then take it down to volume one, and then we'll start the fresh material for today, please.
Okay. After going through several days of privation and of tears, I found myself all confused and annihilated within myself. In my interior, I kept saying continuously, "Tell me, oh my good, why have you moved away from me? Where have I offended you that you no longer make yourself seen? And if you show yourself, you are almost concealed and silent. Oh, please, do not make me wait and wait any longer, for my heart cannot take any more."
Yeah, this was her privations. Remember that, Maureen? Mm-hmm. And it was really bad for her. But then Jesus comes on later and says, okay, do you know why I was doing that? He says, I was making it easier for you. And I'm going to make it easier for those souls. Anytime that I give a privation, a cross, anything that looks disruptive, but it's an obstacle to overcome as we along our journey, it's to help them. Now, for example, the privation, he says specifically, will help us redouble the love that we have for Jesus, which in essence will redouble and fill the voids that we have created in our lives. And again, there's two voids. There's the void that God placed in each and every one of us, and that's that everlasting body or that the space to house God, and that's going to be continuously expanding. That's a good void. The second void are those, quote, missed opportunities to give love and affection on the level of God, due to God, throughout our lives. You know, the lack of gratitude or that ingratitude, for lack of a better phrase. So all those voids must be filled, Jesus says, before we can enter heaven. So God is giving us, again, on or in this exile, the opportunity to redouble our love for God through the privation, keeping fixed on him, even though we can't see him, we can't hear him, we can't smell him, we can't taste him. But be out of sight, not out of mind. We're able to fill those voids at a faster pace. And if he says, if we do that for the rest of our lives, he's not specific. He's not giving us math, but he says, if we do that for the rest of our lives, we will fill those voids. And if we live in the divine will perfectly and completely, if all those three conditions are met, we will avoid purgatory. That's the promise. That's the heaven on earth. No way. And I think he says something, which I get a chuckle, but he says, of course you will not go to purgatory because I would be judging me. Or no, who would judge me? Nobody. I mean, basically he's saying, I'm going to escort you. I'll be arm in arm with you going up to heaven. So no one's going to say, okay, you have to go to purgatory. You're with me. So that's exactly where he's got us. That's exactly the opportunity he gives us. And even if we fall short of that, we're still in a pretty good situation, I think. Any thoughts on Emory?
Yeah, I don't know. I have a lot to make up for. I mean, I realize how easy my life has been, and it makes me a little nervous. So I really got to get on with it, you know, like a little more sacrificing. And I love to hear about the voids because it's a reminder. And when you first start journeying in the divine will, you hear these words, voids, and it's good to keep hearing them because you need to keep remembering what exactly they are. And that's why it's really, I like when you explain them again and all the little terms that you find yourself reading. And we should memorize them so we know that clicks right away what it means. So it's good. It's good. I'm glad you do that, Peter, because I need to be refreshed in that too.
I think we all do. But you know, when you say you're looking at your life and you've had it pretty easy, I mean, I can say the same thing, but you know, it's not bad if it's not been as challenging as maybe some other people.
Yeah.
But I think I'm in a worse situation than you because I didn't have God in my life until I was like 27, 28 years old. I mean, I didn't dislike God. I sort of said, I'll call you when I need you, God, because everything was, I thought, pretty good. You know, I was doing all right. But of course I was deceiving myself. But if you lived your life loving God and honoring God and doing what he asks, even if your life is simple, I mean, some people have had very, very beautiful lives, you know, with little. Not everyone is called to suffer. We all have our different types of crosses.
Yeah.
But I think the one that we had to be concern or be afraid of. And I don't think any of us fall into that category. If we don't have God, and like where I was, and you're making money and you have this and you've got that, you got all these things. And if that persists, and then our whole life is things, prestige, power, and all, and not nefarious necessarily, but just that is our life and God is excluded. You know, that reminds me of Psalm 73. If you read Psalm 73, it's like, those who question, like, I'm trying here, I'm struggling. Look at that guy. I mean, we shouldn't be looking around, but look at that guy. He's so bad. He does this, he does that. Look, he's got a great job. He's got all the money he needs. He's got all the, but look at them. And then in Psalm 73, God says, no, don't look at them. And then I'll just let you know, what about that? Those who have been living their lives absent of me, doing just what they want to do for their own benefit, they're going to wake up one day as if everything was a dream, because nothing is real except God. That's Psalm 73. So a lot of lessons in the Psalms. That's probably the only one I really remember well enough to articulate. And even that wasn't a great articulation. But again, whatever we've gone through, it's only been, he says that too. That I just came across that phrase today. He says, everything you've gone through has been sort of like a test. Do you remember that?
Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, everything that you've been through has been like a preparation. That's what he says. It's been a preparation for more difficult things. Oh, here it is. Volume one, quote, my beloved, the things past have been nothing but a preparation. Okay. And then he goes on to say, also in volume one, to continue on that theme, quote, what you have gone through is nothing yet. Prepare yourself for harder trials, end quote. So again, everything that he has given us an opportunity to do, he is going to ratchet up a bit, because we're going to have, again, we need these extra graces. That's why he's giving us this opportunity in the exile, this opportunity to enchant him so that he may give us these graces. Remember, grace anticipates the soul. We may receive it just at the moment we need it, not before, not after. So God is saying, just have confidence in me, have trust in me. Don't give up on me. Everything will be okay with me, but it's all with me. And that's capital M-E, and not with me, but with E. So I think that's all, again, I think that's easy for us, if you think about it. Remember, he said he had to make this easy and accessible. So I think we may try to diligently not overcomplicate this, because if he said he made available to everyone, that's everyone. And I'm not the smartest guy. And if I am starting to see a little bit into this, then anyone can. Again, I think we can't overcomplicate it. We shouldn't get nervous and anxious about it. I mentioned the one time, go on a couch, get a blanket, get a cup of tea and coffee. Make sure your obligations are done, so no one's shouting for you and yelling for you to come in. And you're reading that divine will, and you didn't do this and that. But make sure that's what I go through. Make sure it's the right time, and just sit on that couch and just, okay, Lord, what do you want to tell me now? Okay, Blessed Mother, what do you want to say to me today or right now? It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful that that each of us can have this. Thank you, Peter. Can have this opportunity to embrace it. And let my son's making me take coffee, sir. Like I didn't have enough coffee, right? Had that guy stop talking?
We never say that.
But anyway, I say it about myself. How could you not say it? But okay, so I don't even know where I was. Okay. So we read that. Now, volume, that's the footnote number one. Do we have time? Okay, I think we do. Let's just, because this really explains a lot, Maureen, if we can just read this right here.
Okay. Volume 13, May 21st, 1921. Jesus finds rest in the souls who live in his will. As I was in my usual state, my always lovable Jesus made himself seen in my arms in the act of taking rest. I pressed him to my heart and I told him, my love, say a word to me. Why are you silent? And Jesus, my beloved daughter, rest is necessary to me. After I have spoken to you so much, I want the first effects of my words within you. You work, doing what I have taught you, and I will rest. And once you have put my teachings into practice, I will come back again to speak to you about higher and more sublime things in order to find rest more beautiful in you. Besides, if I do not rest in the souls who live in my will, in whom could I hope for rest? Only the souls who live in my will are able to give me rest. The living in my will forms the room for me. The acts done in my will form my bed. The repeated acts and the constancy in repeating them are the lullabies, the melodies, and the opium to favor my sleep. However, while I sleep, I watch over you in such a way that your will is nothing other than the outpouring of mine. Your thoughts, the outpouring of my intelligence. Your word, the outpouring of mine. Your heart, the outpouring of my heart. Therefore, even if you do not hear me speak, there is such dissolving of yourself within me that you do not want, nor think, nor do anything but what I want and do. So, as long as you live in my will, you can be sure that everything that happens within you is me.
Isn't that beautiful?
It is beautiful.
He's telling us that, you know, he has to rest. He's not resting because he's tired. He's resting so we can masticate, so we can chew, so we can ponder, so we can meditate, so we can call on God to give us the grace of contemplation, to know the best out of what he's given us. And again, we talked about it too. It's like giving that baby a spoonful of baby food, and you don't keep jamming more food in the mouth. You wait till the baby chews it or moves it around the mouth, swallows it, and then you get more. He's doing the same with us. And he talks about this rest. He also talks to us that he really hasn't had that seventh day of rest yet, because until we go back to the prelapse era of Adam and Eve, God cannot rest. He's waiting, but the bed's being made as we're doing the acts and divine, as everything's being redone, renewed. Everything, again, he's getting his rest ready. And when the souls are all living in the divine will, that's, of course, when he can take his beautiful, sweet sleep. So, again, he's metaphorically giving us a lot of suggestions here, but I think he's really point blank saying, you know, this is what's pleasing to me. This is what's enabling me to do what I need to do as God. And I think that's so extraordinary that we have even the slightest bit of involvement in this is just so humbling. I mean, it's actually unbelievable to be honest with you.
I think it's important. It's important for us to realize that. I mean, it was important for me, so maybe for others. I remember reading that in heaven, everybody has their own Jesus. You don't have to wait in line to speak to Jesus in heaven because he's always with you. So that's something new for us, but it's easy to understand, right? So when we're in the divine will, we're reading the divine will. I think we need to realize that it's just think of it as, and I think Our Lady says this too in her book, just think of it as it's you and Jesus. That's it. It's you and Jesus in the world. He belongs to you and you belong to him. And when he's talking to you, it's just you and you're speaking to him on a private level. And he says, when you're reading the volumes, he sits with you to help you understand. So that personal relationship, which is so deep and so, so wonderful. I think if we realize that, it'll help us to have the desire to read more and to learn more. It's just you and him, and he's your private tutor, and he knows everything in your heart. He knows when you're having trouble. He knows when you're trying. He knows when you're not trying. He knows when you love him, when you're faking. You know what I mean? It's your own private tutor, how to love God by God. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's our job also to take that private relationship, that personal relationship, and make it an intimate relationship, because that's what God wants. He wants to take it to the next level. I mean, yeah. As Christians, we want that personal relationship. But now he's saying, no, I want something even greater than a personal relationship. I want an intimate relationship. And that's why he's bringing this small group to be intimately so close to him, never before since Adam and Eve, to sort of rework the cog. Remember, Jesus, he kept going. His power kept going. But Adam disconnected. He disengaged and therefore could not the power of God cannot be transmitted to him. So then obviously he could not transmit it down to his children. So now he's calling this small group to reconnect, just like Adam and Eve did, to get the cog in motion again, and then allowing his grace, his graces to pass through us. We're just conduits. I mean, we're not doing it. We're not generating anything. We're not relaying anything. He's just going right through us. But again, he needs his small group. And that's what I think that's what we are, or who we are. And I hope that's who we are. So again, Lord, we want an intimate relationship with you. And I think he's going to form that, because again, with these spiritual marriages, he's going to have to get that intimate. We're going to have to become intimate, just like in the secular world. You must become intimate. You must know your spouse as well as you can before you can make that commitment. Again, we're going to have that spiritual marriage. He guarantees it if we want it. And he's going to make sure that we have the relationship necessary so that that marriage can be fortified. It's incredible. Everything is so mystical. I mean, we're trying to explain this in words. It's inadequate, but I guess that's all we have right now. Okay, before we go to the new material, because we never have time, I just wanted to, Maureen, if you don't mind, I'd like to open up. Does anyone have any comments about this journey in the exile, crossing the exile, anything? It could be criticism, it could be comment, it could be an insight, it could be an insult if you want. Just don't insult Maureen, you can insult me. Just if you want to raise your hand, I can unmute you. Not physically raise your hand, but I think there's a button there where you can. Is there a button there, Maureen? You can say raise hand.
I don't know
from that end. I don't have the same controls.
Raise hand. No? You can chat and say, I want to say.
Okay,
something.
Well, you can chat me and say, I want to be unmuted.
Yeah.
That you can do. But if I, okay, well, if anyone wants to say anything while we're continuing here, because we only have about 10 or 15 minutes left. We'll stop. Okay, but we're going to continue with the new material. And Maureen, if we can go here, this is the second part of this: humility without confidence is false virtue. This we have not covered yet, so this is all brand new, and we'll read this and then go to footnote number 2 if we could.
Okay. Humility is the anchor of peace during the storms of the sea waves of this life. Humility, is this where I'm supposed to be, Peter, or the one above it?
The one that says begin 2:14, is it today? Finally, Jesus showed himself a little more. That's the reading. That's the passage from volume 2. Do you see it? It says, finally, Jesus showed himself.
Oh, well, you're up there. Okay, jeez, I was all the way down the other end.
But then we're going to take it down to 2. And now, yes, humility. Then we're going to go there, because that's what I've placed there. That's not the important thing. The important thing, what Jesus placed here, and that's... Okay. That's the one we're going to read right now.
Okay. Finally, Jesus showed himself a little more clearly, and in seeing me so annihilated, he told me, if you knew how much I like humility, humility is the littlest plant that can be found, but its branches are so high as to reach heaven, wind their way around my throne, and penetrate deep into my heart. This little plant is humility. And the branches which this plant produces are confidence. So there cannot be true humility without confidence. Humility without confidence is false virtue. From the words of Jesus, it shows that my heart was not only annihilated, but also a little discouraged.
Okay, so there is where he says that, you know, true humility without confidence is a false humility. It's a false virtue. So we must have that confidence. And how do we gain the confidence? You know, it's just forming that intimate relationship, I believe. And I find that, you know, Maureen, we gain confidence every time we read what Jesus wrote and what our Blessed Mother wrote and what Saint Hannibal wrote. I mean, these are extraordinary things. You know, to know that we have a saint that was so intimately involved in this, and also a saint that was involved in Our Lady of La Salette, a fully approved apparition of our Holy Church, who was the spiritual director to Melanie Calvert, who was the seer to Our Lady of La Salette, also to Louisa Picanetta. So again, he's got this incredible dossier. And again, I think God's got everything lined up. I mean, no matter how many holes you try to poke through this, there's no way. I mean, many people have tried to do it. And Jesus says in the volumes, woe to them. Okay, but this is the footnote number 2 that I thought was going to, that I thought would assist, and it's actually the second part of volume 3 January 12th, 1900, that I just happened to find. But again, this is not what Jesus told us or Father Nuzzi drove us into, but I just thought it articulates what was read above a little bit deeper.
Volume 3, January 12th, 1900. Ah, yes, humility draws grace. Humility breaks the strongest chains, which are sin. Humility surmounts any wall of division between the soul and God and brings her back to Him. Humility is a little plant, but always green and flowery, not subject to being gnawed by worms, nor will winds, hail, or heat be able to do it harm to it or make it wither even slightly. Though being the littlest plant, humility produces very high branches which penetrate even into heaven, braiding around the heart of our Lord. And only the branches which come from this plant have free access into that adorable heart. Should I keep going, Peter?
Please, yes.
Okay. Humility is the anchor of peace during the storms of the sea waves of this life. Humility is the salt which spices all virtues and preserves the soul from the corruption of sin. Humility is the little grass which sprouts along the way, treaded by wayfarers. While being treaded, it disappears, but soon one can see it sprout again, more beautiful than before. Humility is like a gentle graft, which renders the wild plant gentle. Humility is the sunset of guilt. Humility is the newborn of grace. Humility is like the moon, which guides us in the darkness of the night of this life. Humility is like that shrewd merchant who knows well how to trade his riches and waste not even 1 cent of the grace that is given to him. Humility is the key of the door of heaven, such that no one can enter into it if he does not keep this key in good custody. Finally, otherwise I would never end and I would be too long. Humility is the smile of God and of all heaven, and it is the crying of hell.
Wow.
Wow.
Maureen, we've got about 4 minutes or so left. Do you have a hard break, or can we just do the next
one? No, I can do the next one. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Okay. Why don't we continue this humility, and we can open up to see if anyone has any comments. This is the continuation here in bold, then we'll drop it down to another reflection, I think, in a different volume that I think accentuates the point.
Therefore, by making continuous acts of humility, by repeating, I am the nothing, Jesus, you are the all, help me, Louisa, I am your baby, you will put into practice the below passage from volume 1, and Jesus will give you peace, because humility is the anchor of peace. Volume 1. And it happened in this way. Every morning after communion, he would tell me what I was supposed to do during the day. I will say everything briefly, because after so much time, it is impossible to say everything. I don't remember for sure, but it seems to me that he told me that the first thing which was necessary in order to purify the interior of my heart was the annihilation of myself. That is humility.
And again, annihilation, we've talked about this. It's not obliteration. It's not, you know, making it go away. It doesn't exist anymore. It's basically allowing our human will take sort of a back seat to God's will. And I have a note here. Let it take a back seat or be humiliated. I think was it Father Celso who says to be humble, you must be humiliated to be humbled. I'm sure he didn't coin that phrase, but it's a nice reminder. And a lot of times we need that. We need to get sort of knocked down to one knee. I had to get knocked down flat on my face because I thought I was a big deal and I was really nothing. And God was trying to get my attention. He couldn't. He was knocking, so I wasn't listening. So he had to just, you know, knock me down, knock me out, and then that got my attention. And then he had to do what he had to do. He had to take everything away from me to get me to recognize that I am nothing and He is all. So I hope He doesn't have to take everything away from you. So if you're listening, just make your commitment now before you have to be like I was. but again, it was one of the greatest things that ever happened in my life. In fact, if it didn't happen, I probably would be dead. Definitely spiritually, maybe even physically. Okay, we can continue, Maureen, if we could, please.
Okay. And he continued, "See, so that I may pour my graces in your heart, I really want you to understand that you can do nothing by yourself. I am very much wary of those souls who attribute what they do to themselves, wanting to make of my graces as many thefts. On the other hand, with those who know themselves, I am generous in pouring my graces in torrents, knowing very well that they can attribute nothing to themselves. They are grateful to me. They hold it in that esteem which befits it. And they live with the continuous fear that if they do not correspond to me, I may take away from them that which I gave, knowing that it does not belong to them. It is all the opposite in the hearts which reek of pride. I cannot even enter into their hearts because they are so swollen with themselves that there is no space in which to put myself. These miserable ones take my graces into no account, and they go from fall to fall up to their ruin. Therefore, on this day, I want you to make continuous acts of humility. I want you to be like a baby wrapped in swaddling clothes who can move neither a foot to take a step nor a hand to work, but expects everything from his mother. In the same way, you will stay close to me like a baby, always praying me to assist you, to help you, always confessing your nothingness, in sum, expecting everything from me."
It's so simple. Mm. Who gets in our, I know who gets in my way almost all the time. Me. Nobody else. I may blame others at times, but it's just me. Mm-hmm. He, you know, we've talked about this, Maureen. He wants this more than we can ever imagine. And he's trying to give us insights. And I think, you know, these were just words. I mean, these are beautiful words and they're beautifully formatted. But I think if we reread this again, maybe I'll copy paste this into the email this evening. We reread this again slowly and allow God to expand on all these words. I think the lessons can be extraordinary. This is important because as he explains, he can take away from them which I give for that lack of gratitude or for that ingratitude, knowing that it does not belong to them. And it's all the opposite in the hearts that reek pride. I cannot either enter their hearts, but then it's just the opposite on those who recognize their nothingness, recognize that Jesus is, he's amused by our wretchedness, not our deliberate sinfulness necessarily, but by our inability to do anything well. He knows that. He knows that better than we do. So if we start to pretend, we can pretend to ourselves, perhaps. We can pretend to others, perhaps. But we can't pretend to God. He knows exactly who we are. There's no hiding. So, again, we have to just recognize who are we trying to fool and who are we trying to be honest with. And, again, we have to be honest. And with that, he's going to make all things anew, all things right. Any last thoughts?
Yeah, I think that what I realized with the divine will, you begin to realize in a deeper way, like you always hear, God is love, God loves me. God, you hear that all your life, you know, but it's just words. But when you begin to read the divine will, you sometimes it like takes your breath away. What Jesus does for us, and he wants us to know so much how much he loves us and what he'll go to try and explain it over and over and over. And when that starts to sink in, it's easier to want to be a nothing because our God almost became that for us. And so these things become these things that he wants us to be. Before the divine will were hard, but once you, and I think it's important that you read and see the with the knowledges, you see what he does for us in a deeper way. It just becomes easier in a way. It's not easy, but you have a desire to do it because you feel in your heart it goes deeper what he's done and how much he loves you. So you really want to do these things. Where before it was like, I don't know if I can ever do that. You know, it just, that's for saints. Now you want to, if it's for saints, then that's what you want to be. It's crazy.
it is, but even the joy in your laugh explains what your heart feels. And I think that's where we have to be. You know, with this humility, I think it's an eye opener, because I think it puts things into perspective. It takes us off our high horse. Doesn't matter what we have in this life. If we don't have God, we have nothing. And I think he's trying to tell us that in a very artistic way. But this is important, this humility. And again, if he has to humiliate us, if he has to bring us down, if he has to knock us down, then he only does that because he loves. It's a tough love. And, you know, we don't like to give tough love, even as parents, but we recognize how vital it is at times. I think I'd like to end, Maureen, with something that I think goes very well with this humility and being humbled and being humiliated, all those above. I don't know who wrote it. I can't take credit for it. But I think it's beautiful, and I try to read this every day. And this is what it is. Quote, actually, we'll use it as a supplication. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. The kingdom of the divine will is so valuable that once you have glimpsed it, it is worth parting with everything you have in order to gain it, even though to others you may look like a fool. You know of the hidden treasure, and that makes it worth everything. End quote. We're going to have to get past the ridicule. Oh, that's condemned. Oh, that's not true. Oh, that's heresy. Oh, that's not approved. Okay. Jesus says it is. Our Blessed Mother says it is. He says all will be well. If we don't have faith, we have nothing. Remember, faith is God, volume 2. Thanks be to God. Radio Maria tomorrow. For anyone who'd like to listen, 11 a.m., we'll have Mother Gabriel Marie and the Benedictine Daughters that are coming to us live tomorrow from Maryville, Tennessee, on Radio Maria at 11 a.m. Maureen?
I just, when I hear they're in Maryville, I just have to giggle.
I know.
You know what I mean? I'm like, did anybody just hear that? They're in Maryville.
Yeah. And Mother. They're in the 100-acre woods.
Oh my gosh.
You remember where that's from?
Winnie the Pooh.
Winnie the Pooh, right? So they're in Maryville, Tennessee, in the 100-acre woods. Jeez. You can't make this stuff up.
No, you can't.
Thanks be to God. Bye, everyone. See everyone tomorrow.
Bye, everybody. Well,
listen to everyone tomorrow. Radio Maria. And who do we have on? Oh, we have you and I on Friday. For the ebook series, Father Ainuzzi's dissertation. And then Sunday, I forget who we have. I think we have the sisters in Italy, I think. If I only had a brain, I'd be okay. Okay, love everyone. See everyone tomorrow.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thanks be to God.